Hello there, I'm Tim and he's John, and this is How to Murder Time, a podcast about games and stuff.
Hello.
It's Games and Things, isn't it? I fluffed it.
Oh, it is, yeah.
Not that it matters. Should we carry on anyway?
Let's carry on anyway.
We're pros, yes.
Yeah, we're pros.
We'll sort that in the edit.
We do know what we're doing.
Excellent. Hello again.
Hello. Yes, hello.
We're back with some more chat about some things that we've done.
Games and films and things.
Yes, I'm going to kick off with Guild Wars 2 because that's my current thing at the moment.
Is that still going?
It is. I don't even need that still going. It's only been out like 3 months. If I were principled or something, I'd be just looking into buying a copy about now. But, yeah, we've still been doing that. A bit of a quiet week, really. We've sort of missed various groups getting together for dungeoneering and so on. We were going to have a proper go at the fractals, but turned out not to be the case. And now we've missed our monthly quota. It's all about performance and quotas and TPS reports.
Were you
and
too
things.
Busy having fun?
Too busy enjoying the game and just pottering about to get my monthly achievements ticked off.
You're going
to
have to stop that. And now you can't go back and get those.
Yeah, we missed the do seven dungeons and also do a load. Was it five dungeons and seven fractals? And the fractals don't count as dungeons, as it turned out. So we're well off. I mean, I got my World v World kill quota down, but and also I didn't manage to kill enough Karka crab things either, so actually I was 1 for 4 on the monthly achievements for November.
Do you have a gap in your achievement history now?
It's going to be noted on my permanent record at ArenaNet, absolutely.
So there's no point doing any more because you can no longer be perfect.
I've broken my streak, yes, absolutely. I mean, I think there might be disciplinary hearings as well. I'm not sure if this is a written warning or a verbal warning, I don't know, but I'm going to have to try much harder for December, which is Fractals again. How lazy is that? I think it's World v World kills and Fractals are the two non-question marky ones for December.
I suspect there's going to be an awful lot of fractals going forward.
Well, I think it's just such a transparent stick that they're using to prod the player base into doing stuff with. Let's just put a progress bar and give them some stuff if they manage to do the things we want them to be doing and not coming up with alternate gameplay and mucking about and wasting everyone's time. If progress and efficiency, you see.
Yeah.
Probably. I don't know. We were mucking about in World v World mostly this week, having a bit of a go. That's the same with all PvP, really. You'll have good sessions and bad sessions. This was all a bit steamrollery, to be honest. We were in the wrong place and being overwhelmed quite a lot. Doing our bit to try and build up siege equipment, but everything just kept moving too quickly to have any use out of siege equipment. Putting up siege equipment relies on lots of people making sure they've got the supply from all the little supply camps and coordinating to get the stuff built quickly so it can be used when it's needed. And it's no good, when the enemy come knocking at the gates having like 8 or 9 incomplete scaffolding pieces on top of the wall. That just doesn't really help. Everyone seems to have the blueprints, but no one has the supply. It's like everyone's trying to solo siege equipment,
That's how sieges work.
Well, it's the problem. It's why they don't work. It's all down on the different pairings. With the every couple of weeks, you get pitted against different servers. I think it's onto a fortnightly thing now, or maybe possibly even weekly. And I think we've been drawn against some servers who quite know what they're doing. So that's quite harsh, really. We're trying to hook onto the back of the Zergs in progress, but it's all very scattered in there. I don't know whether that's because particular commanders, and a commander is a real thing in Guild Wars 2. You pay 100 gold,
yeah,
which is like a colossal sum of money in terms of efficiency man work hours
this week.
Yeah, and you buy a book, and when you use the book, you gain the commander thing, and that basically gives you a little blue symbol on that shows you on the minimap to all players.
So everyone does this?
Well, I don't know. You see a couple, but so far I've never seen the same name twice, perhaps because I just don't frequent the place enough to get a real good handle on, the real solid players in there. But I suppose, it's a command position that you can get by spending 100 gold, not by being any good at inspiring troops and moving them forward and stuff. But that's a system, it's almost impossible to come up with any kind of in-game enforced metric anyway. So really, if you're going to follow commanders and try and be part of a proper standing reserve militia or whatever for these servers, you've got to do it lots and just start to get a feel for when people shout out orders on on the map chat which ones seem to work quite often and which ones don't. That way you'll get a feel for who you ought to be following. I'm not at that stage yet. I'm a dabbler. And also, mostly at the moment, I'm just cracking on with the 100% map completion thing. I'm up to about 95% now, and I'm starting to have trouble finding the other bits. I know I need to do a lot of work in Malkor's Leap, and that terrifies me, because that is a zone. It's as difficult as the level 80 Cursed Shores zone, only you don't have a guarantee of level 80 drop loot, because it's a level 80 to a 70 to 80 zone. So most of the time, all the drops in there are not max level drops. So you'll get a load of 72 to 78 gear, which you'd still need to replace. It's not the best in slot for anyone. Yet the whole sort of aesthetic of the place, it's all part of the Drowned Kingdom of Ore, which is the end game stuff. And it's got all these massive collaborative events in there as well. Trouble is, no buggers in there doing any of it. It is a zone full of people having real trouble soloing, because everyone's next door in the zone where you are guaranteed to get level 80 loot.
Yeah.
So it becomes this vastly underpopulated place where you can't get the oomph together to keep all these events going and keep all the outposts in friendly hands and usable. It uses the old tabula rasa problem with your outposts keep getting attacked by NPCs on a pretty brutal clockwork regularity. Sort of like, yeah, every 20 minutes, every 30 minutes or so, they'll come, you know, waves and waves of enemies will just come crashing in and destroy your outposts again, so you can't use any of the teleport stones. And it takes a really determined group of people to try and, you know, make a commitment to keep these places open and usable. And most people don't bother, because they're next door, because the rewards are much better for essentially what amounts to broadly the same difficulty of content. It's a bit of a design problem, Malkor's Leap. It is just a hellish place, and I'm not looking forward to trying to get my 100% map for that zone done, because it's just going to involve visiting a lot of places that you need an army to shift the monsters out of. So it's going to be a lot of running and trying to, you know, rugby tackle your way to the tagging point and dying and hoping you made it. And, yeah, so that might be something we'll have to try and organise the guild to do all at the same time, try and get a bit of muscle, get a bit of a group going through there. Apart from that, though, I mean, I think probably a bit of Fireheart Rise I'm missing. The far end of the Char stuff, which is another 70-ish zone. And a few of the middle-level zones that I sort of meandered through, and then I'm going to be there. I reckon a week or two, probably, and then I'll have 100% map completed Guild Wars 2.
Then you can quit.
Then I can probably well, yeah. I mean, I don't know. Until I actually get Dawn, which is the precursor for the Legendary, my stockpiling bits and pieces for the Legendary is all entirely speculative and not something that has... There's too much randomness involved. I mean, yes, obviously I can save up enough gold to just buy the damn thing off the auction house, but it's not something I can plot a path forward and decide is going to be my content in this game. So I'm not quite sure what will happen with 100% of it. Maybe I'll pick up my Guardian ult and do it all again, try it as a tanky type of character, but apart from that, it's the usual sort of endgame pickup group dungeoneering, which I normally don't find much traction with. So we'll have to see. Well, she'll have to see. I think I'm seeing a lot of alt work, probably, and a lot of mid-level, just, you know, just having fun with guildmates, but I'm not seeing the game itself providing me with attractive options for continued play into the years ahead, you know, which is going to be a problem. I don't know. Perhaps I'm alone. Perhaps I'm alone in thinking this and a bit lightweight, but we'll see.
Oh, almost, undoubtedly.
Yes, I've been playing a lot of Star Trek Online over the last week.
Somebody has to.
Yeah, well, it's... I just thought, yeah, the Season 7 thing reminded me it was there, and I popped in. And I thought, I'll just do a few duty officer missions going and then not worry about it. And I find myself actually playing the damn thing now. Well, because after about a year of grinding, I managed to get enough of the dilithium exchanged for Perfect World Zen points to be able to buy my KDF officer, the carrier that I'd been after.
Congratulations.
Yes, about a year's diligent grinding, and I managed to unlock Well, the problem is that my KDF officer never had a top-level ship. Because as you work through the game, from the levels like usual, every 10 levels you get a special token that you can take to the shipyard, and you can swap that for a spaceship so that you can carry on and continue to be viable.
Because that's the way the Federation works.
Except at the very top end, when you reach level 50, they don't give you a token, because all of those spaceships are cash shop spaceships that you need to exchange either just dilithium for or convert the dilithium for the cash shop currency. Most of it's the currency. You can, of course, buy the Zen points in the traditional manner. I believe that's how free-to-play is meant to work. And so basically, but I got really lucky with my Federation character because I was playing around the time they did that big anniversary giveaway with the Odyssey, which apparently is the new canon Enterprise what said or something, I don't know.
Apparently it's canon, yes.
Well, canon in the way that no one else is using the canon at the moment, so yes, go on then. And they'll retcon it all out as soon as there's a new Star Trek film in the old continuity. I don't know, but that ship was fantastic. It's a level 50 ship. It's basically quite... It's a cruiser. It was quite a tanky, Haley slugger of a spaceship that will quite happily just sit there doing lazy circles with eight beam arrays and almost indefinitely survivable. And I've been using that constantly as my Federation character and never seen a need to upgrade from there at all. So that was good. I got quite lucky with that. The Odyssey that was given away as the sort of anniversary present thing was not quite as pimped as the one in the cash shop. I think there was a bunch of consoles that
you
got.
Three in the cash shop.
Three different sorts in the cash shop, yeah. But I haven't seen the need to improve on that ship at all. Well, obviously I can tinker around with builds and best-in-slot equipment and so on, but the ship itself... It's fantastic. I mean, I've been sort of inspired by my playing the KDF character. I then was starting to save up on my Federation character, save up dilithium so I could get one of the blockade escort things.
Yes.
Just so I got a bit of a DPS-y glass cannon boat option for the Federation. But that was just a sort of side musing thing. But the KDF character, nothing. I got to level 40 and was given some sort of bird of prey. I don't know can't remember the Klingon name of it, but... It has a cloak and loads of cannon slots and really quite fragile. And that was it's actually quite fun to fly. So I was doing all right with that. But yes, no level 50 ship for the KDF. So I thought, well, damn it, I'm going to try this free-to-play cash shop conversion type promise. Most free-to-play games these days will give you the option of grinding out these points in-game, but it will be an absolutely impossible task.
They don't expect anyone to be dumb enough to do it.
I don't think don't expect anyone to take that seriously, but I have, because I'm quite stubborn. And it's taken me about a year of squirreling my dilithium away, and whenever I get a couple of thousand, swap it for three or four cryptic points or whatever, and I've seen them change to Perfect World Zen points during that time. So
did they change to Atari points first?
No, just one day there were C points in the C store, and now there's Zen points in the Zen store. So it might still be a C store, but you use Zen points. Already confusing. But yes, I've finally managed to, you know, this last recent revival with the new Romulus stuff and me just tinkering around in there anyway, doing the occasional dailies and getting the dilithium, I finally managed to hit my target, which was 2,000 Zen points for the ship I wanted. It was the big Orion Marauder carrier thing at the top end there. And that coincided with a 20% off sale on ships as well. I thought, damn you, but now I've got some spare points, so fair enough. Which was just as well, because then I needed to buy a whole load of bridge officer slots, because the bridge officer distribution for this ship is entirely different to a bird of prey, and I didn't want to have to keep respecing them every time I wanted to change ships. So it all worked out in the end. It's a pretty beefy ship. It's a very sort of cruiser type, very similar sort of gameplay to the Odyssey, where it's all about tanking, surviving, and doing big lazy circles with beam arrays. You get nowhere trying to fly this thing in any sort of arc-based combat. You never keep anything in front of you in it. But it gets the special ability of launching two flights of Marauder ships, little wingy things that fly off out, and you can have two sets of two, and so four of them in play, and they're basically sort of fly into the enemy and then do a load of massive debuffing as their little crew beam aboard and start running havoc across. It's a bit like the boarding party ability that most people can get, except it's permanent and persistent. They'll keep redoing the attack over and over, and you can launch two more fighters every two or three minutes or so. So that all adds up with the DPS. I'm doing quite well with it. It still needs a lot of work. It's all kitted out with a hasty collection of green quality equipment at the moment. I need to work on the blues and purples for it all. But it's given me a massive new lease of life for the game itself, because top-end Star Trek Online for me is very much about the tinkering. It's a sort of pottering kind of... There's loads and loads and loads of quite short-span duration activities that are repeatable in there. There's a lot of dailies in all sorts of different areas. And all of the featured episodes are repeatable, and when you repeat them, they start showing a different reward list. And so basically you're sort of catalogue shopping for particular upgrades by going off and replaying specific old content. You're thinking, right, I need eight of those lasers, so I need to go off and do that mission 8 times. And then I need those neutronium panellings, and that comes from this mission over here. And it's quite good. It's quite a clever way of keeping the old stuff reasonably fresh. I mean, I'm going to get a bit sick of the one I got to do 8 times for the plasma disruptor beam array banks. But you get quite honed. it becomes about specialisation, quite, but you know, sort of finesse. Okay, yes, I've done this mission a lot, but I could probably do it perfectly if I keep trying. And of course, the new role. Yeah, you got that. Your ship has a whole load of slots for different sorts of equipment. Then your bridge officers all have different slots for their equipment, and the bridge officers also have different slots for their abilities. And then you've got all your own slots and equipment. And then if you've got other ships, you can repeat the whole process again. So if you really like sort of tinkering around and incrementally improving your best in slot options for your character sheets, this game provides a lot of slots to do that with, and also a lot of different ways to go about filling those slots, different sorts of options. So it's a pleasant sort of pottering gameplay. I mean, I'm liking the new Romulus stuff. Have you been in there?
I have. Yes, I patched and logged in.
Yeah, hey.
It's big.
It's big. Yeah. Romulus. Big. Oh, the actual planet.
Yeah.
When you beam down. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got multiple zones.
Yeah.
You have to have reputation clearance to get into the further zones. I've not seen those yet, but just the starter place is pretty huge.
Yeah.
I went there.
I started helping because apparently everyone there is useless. I need the Federation to bail them out.
It's quite tongue in cheek. A lot of the quest techs, how it's just they're trying to ignore the fact that there are like hundreds of vice admirals and brigadier generals all running around doing fetching carrying work and looking for lost spanners and things. A lot of the quest texts says things like, oh yeah, you have to get that shiny uniform dirty and help with some real work, you know.
Yeah.
it's just like no one of any kind of menial grade left in that universe. Everyone's a general or a vice admiral.
Unlike most of the other zones, these have fast travel points. They're so big.
The teleport network, that's one of the early quests there, is to go around and tag each one to open it up, so that helps, yeah.
Yeah, it's quite a nice-looking place.
Had you seen the Tholian planet, Nukara or something?
No,
like
I haven't seen that yet.
But that has a similar system where there's a bunch of different teleport pads around the place that you can get to the different quests.
Yeah.
The different missions.
Oh, I fought some Tholians.
Yeah.
In space.
Oh, that's quite cool, isn't it?
I checked on the web.
I hadn't seen them do... I hadn't actually fought them in space until today. I was having a go at that this afternoon. And yeah, it's pretty cool with the big web thing flying out everywhere. Yeah,
that was one of the only fights I managed to get, because I kept going to Deep Space Encounters because I just wanted to have a quick fight.
Yeah, yeah.
And every time I got there, they'd all just finished.
The red alert button.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, not with the red alert button.
No?
The red alert button, when I pushed it, I turned up just when it ended. And all of the Deep Space Encounters
finished. You should try the planets. Those are single-player instances, which would always have some fighting for you to do.
Yeah.
Some of those are against just Norsicans and Klingon Raiders and whatever.
Because I hadn't played since April, it turns out.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to get in and have a quick space battle,
mm-hmm.
because that's the best bit of the game.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I'm really crap at ground combat, to be honest. I've just about got a character on... And my Federation Engineer can just about hold their own, but... The KDF science character is just absolutely hopeless. It's just total respawn Zerg rush over and over and over again to get anything done in that. So I really need to read some guides or something. I don't think it's the KDF necessarily. It's the science officer. I don't quite understand what they're for. I mean, the tactical officer, that's just straight go in there, pew-pew, you know, kick them to death type thing. And the engineering officer is... basically a massive self-healer and turret type class seems to be the way, and I don't really get what the science person does. The science person goes in there and does a load of massive debuffs, then gets alpha-striked and killed. And then you respawn and you keep doing it until you eventually win. I get through a lot of tissue regenerators on that side. I need to work on that. But I'm just seeing a bit of a new sort of lease of life in it all, to be honest. And you're not even considering it as a big static group. Hooray, we're off to go and work through the stuff in here. It's just me pottering in spare time, and it seems to do quite well with short span activities, you know, just a little bit here, a little bit there. And you can chain them together if you've got more time to spend. But it just seems to lack that kind of huge, long scale, 4-hour dungeon attack type night out thing, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but
it always feels,
depends what you're looking for.
It always feels a tiny bit piecemeal.
Mm-hmm. It is very modular. But I mean, I suppose it's one of the advantages of a game being around much longer is that you've got more and more of these piecemeal content additions still there and still usable in most cases.
Yeah, I've got all of the content since April to do, so that should keep me occupied for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, you should have a look. Have a look for the Tholian planet, where it's all very Starship Troopers there. That's quite a lot of fun. It's literally you. You don't get an away team. It's just you and a gun in a spacesuit chasing bugs around. It's good to unwind with a half hour blasting session.
Yeah. The game does feel like they haven't done an awful lot to it since I left. The patch wasn't that big.
No, that's one thing. I mean, yeah, New Romulus itself seems quite large and quite extensive, but the sector block seems a bit. There's just planets scattered there. You can go in, fight. You know, most times you go to a planet and there'll be a mission to destroy five groups of enemies of whatever type, and then you're done and off you go. And if you do enough of these unconnected jobs, you'll get a meta quest tick off and you get some marks and away you go. Maybe it'll be developed further. Maybe it's a starting point for something a bit more elaborate. But
maybe.
We'll see.
Or maybe not.
Maybe this is it for quite a while now, content update-wise.
They've got form for doing that, but whether or not that's their fault or...
Well, they're keeping the cash shop going quite a lot. There's all sorts of new stuff in there all the time. So mostly new spaceships and lockboxes.
I noticed the lockboxes haven't gone away.
No, God, no. They're well onto that. I can only imagine. Well, just looking at the zone, you know, game wide spam when someone successfully manages to get a spaceship out of one, I'm guessing people are buying quite a lot of keys. So
I'm not entirely sure that they aren't lies.
Well, they're just making up names and broadcasting.
Yeah.
Well, I couldn't prove that one way or another, but. Yeah, I think lockboxes are here to stay. They're adding them to everything these days. I think EverQuest 1 was starting. Was it either that or Vanguard? It was something really unlikely and really sort of, oh, really? You think that'll help? You know. But no, I think pretty much every MMO is going to have them sooner or later. They're very much there in Guild Wars 2. They were designed in from the word go. Black Lion chests you find all over the place and you buy the keys.
How annoying.
Not really. It depends if you let it get to you. These things are there, and some people are using them to get stuff.
Oh, I don't mind them existing. It's the server-wide broadcast.
Oh, no. No one does. I haven't seen anything like that in Guild. No, only Star Trek Online seems to do that, I've seen.
Because that is really annoying. Just... Yeah, you're happily going.
You might even be able to turn them off in settings somewhere, system-wide messages.
Oh, I doubt it. They're quite evil.
Well, the way I see it, lockboxes are here to say, oh, well.
Yeah.
You know, I just delete them from inventory as I loot them and don't think anything of it, really. I mean, Guild Wars 2, at least they dish out the occasional free key now and then as part of, say, a zone, 100% zone map completion or whatever. So you get a look inside, and it's just boosters, it's just XP crafting boosters, whatever, the occasional transmutation tonics and whatever.
Yeah.
And you just think, well, okay, you could take it or leave it. It doesn't make me angry. A lot of people get quite cross about the sort of the scourge of the lockbox, but I don't care. You know, you just delete them, move on. You know, it's only a problem if you feel that there's something in those boxes that you need that you can't get without buying them.
True.
And yes, now and then you'll get a fantastic rare spaceship out of one in Star Trek Online, but I don't need any more. I don't need more spaceships. I've just got a new one. Yeah, we did a bit of research before the show. We reckon that the amount of Zen points I've managed to diligently scrape together by in-game activities...
Over a whole year.
Over about a year or so, comes to about $20.
So do you feel this was a worthwhile use of your time?
Well, obviously I can afford $20. What's that, about 10 quid? 12 quid or so?
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. And yeah, I got enough. I spend more than that on crisps in the average week sometimes. Actually, that's probably a lie. I know crisps are expensive these days.
I'd
have to start using a different resource as a comparison unit.
Remarkably few crisps in a bag anymore.
Anyway, yes, I can afford 12 quid, and I probably would have dropped that on this thing if I'd have desperately wanted the thing. But to me, it became content. I don't know if I'm just really weird.
You are really weird.
I got this strange thing where I see this kind of ridiculous task and actually treat it as content. I think, okay, yes, I could spend 20 quid and complete the game now, or I can work towards a goal. I have something I want, a way to go about getting it, and I quite enjoy the task of doing these missions anyway and accumulating these points. So I think, yeah, okay, well, I'll just put them all aside and eventually, you know, as it turned out, I'll have enough to do the thing. I mean, I had a little bit of a sense of anticlimax about it all, but that was before I started to understand. The problem with this Marauder Marauder carrier thing, when you first go to equip it and fly it and whatever, it does not put the launch fighters button on your skill bar by default. So I went off into quite a few Borg incursion red alerts, not being able to use, not knowing how to use my actual fighters. So the so my carrier it was basically just a cruiser that was doing suboptimal DPS, and people must have been looking at me a bit strangely, to be honest. And I found it in the end. It turns out there's an actual button you have to press to make it launch fighters. But yeah, I mean, initially I was thinking, oh, is that it? It's just a skinned thing that's broadly similar to my Federation character's Odyssey thing. It can launch a few fighters. But then I thought, well, no, that's all right. You know, it's more the journey, and I've actually enjoyed squirreling away these points, saving them up.
So you can do it again?
I think I might, yeah. I mean, I don't see the need to... Well, I mean, my Federation character's doing something broadly similar, and you don't have to cash the dilithium out as Zen points. You could actually buy... the ship I want for there is actually available for dilithium, but it's a huge, huge amount. Probably about 40 or 50 days worth of capped dilithium transfer, whatever. And I think, yeah, okay, I'll chip away at that. I like having some sort of goal. And too often these MMOs don't really produce that anymore. Certainly not the sort of goal I'd like going for, the typical path along end game raiding or whatever. I don't really get enthusiastic about it. But just something you can chip away a little bit a day, see progress. It becomes another XP bar in a way. And I wouldn't be playing MMOs at all if I didn't, at some fundamental level, like watching a level bar go up.
Yeah. And you do get around the really annoying fact that it does cost $20 to buy a ship in Star Trek Online.
Well, I think that's a nothing, really. I think that's well, it depends how much worth you put on these things, your gaming experiences. I mean, for me, it's a sort of point of curiosity as well. They promise that you can do it without paying, and I've just proven it. It just does take a very long time to do. I mean, to be fair, I'm not a hugely obsessive player of Star Trek Online over the last year. I mean, I've been playing a little bit here and there, and, you know, for a couple of months here and there, I'll be quite diligent, and sometimes I haven't been playing it at all for months. But you get there in the end, it's all saved up, it's all still there to come back to when you're interested again. And yeah, so I suppose I think a shared account bank might be worth saving up for. That's 1,000 Zen points. that'll just take me 6 months to get, I think.
Yeah.
There's lots of stuff in there that I just don't need, but it can be useful as a kind of thing to just aim at. You know, it's just good to have a goal. Otherwise, you do get bored of these MMOs if you've got no goal, and you do drift away, which in itself may be telling you something and maybe a good thing, may move you on to more interesting uses of your time. I don't know. I'm not feeling any buyer's remorse, because at the end of the day, there was no way to cash this stuff out back into dollars anyway, so what else was I going to do with these points? You can spend them in a number of different ways in-game, buy better, cool, rare gear instead, but the ships, I think, are the fundamental workhorses of that game. You know, if you've got a decent stable of multi-role ships to play with, that makes your play more flexible, I suppose. So, yeah, got there in the end. I mean, yeah, Planetside 2, on the other hand, I've seen a lot of people... See, they've gone with something broadly similar. Again, it's the same sort of mechanism. It's the sort of, here is a really difficult and lengthy and grindy thing you can achieve, or you can give us some cash and we'll just shortcut you. I mean, the final implementation of their cert system seems to be that you get them just for kills. But I thought they were going to go with some kind of EVE Online thing where you gain them just automatically over time at a slow rate, but that seems not to be the case. They are just dished out for XP. Base capture, a typical hard-fought base capture that will take you 10, 20 minutes to do, will grant you two more cert points.
That's not very...
Yeah, and a lot of the guns start at 7,500 cert points to unlock. A lot of the more advanced infantry weaponry and so on, that kind of thing. I just look at some of those numbers and I look at the rate I'm gaining cert points and I just giggle a lot.
Yeah.
But again, it depends. I mean, I'm yet at the point where I've picked out anything particular that I want to aim at as my guiding star for the next 8 years of Planetside play. But
a
lot of people have much less patience and tolerance of this stuff than I have. Certainly, I'm seeing a lot of people, you know, quite mortified at exactly how long and how much grind it's going to take to get any of these certifications unlocked. I had a bit of a moment myself this week because I've seemed to have developed something of an affinity for the Lightning Light tank. I thought, yeah, okay, I'll specialise in this. This will be what I put all my points in. One of the items you can spend cert points on is acquisition timer reductions. Yeah, here we go. So, and I was, because I don't know if it's just because I've been so lucky with the Lightning that I've not really had a much problem with respawn timers, but I had a bit of a bad one this week's session. You know, just spawned the tank straight into a trap, and a lot of incoming enemy heavy tanks all waiting at the gate as I charge on out to save the day, and they just absolutely annihilated me. And I thought, oh god, that was a bit of a bad run. So do the smart thing, don't respawn here, we'll respawn back at base and come back overland, attack from outside with a fresh tank and everything, don't just, you know, jump straight into the inevitable infantry farm that's going to occur here. And I got back to find that I had an 11 minute timer before I could get another tank out. 11 minutes! I mean, in Planetside 1, it was a flat 5-minute timer for most vehicles, and that was not too bad, you know, 5 minutes. So given the distance between bases, you'd spend half of that time getting to the fight,
yeah.
and then, you know, if you were skilled, you could keep it going much longer than that. If you weren't skilled, you may have to wait around at the vehicle terminal or take a different tank or something. It seems that the default timer certainly for the Lightning now, I mean, I think different vehicles have different timers in Planetside 2, but the Lightning, it starts at 15 minutes.
Wow.
I know, you can go away, play another game, come back in that time.
You could get a couple of rounds of Call of Duty in.
Exactly. I was thinking, and that actually happened. I looked at the clock, it said 11 minutes 58, and I thought, I'm going to play Star Trek Online. Maybe when I come back, it will be ready for me. And I did. I went away. It was so irritating that I just stopped playing and went away. And that's quite bad, because all throughout last week, I've been struggling to get into the game at all because of the population queues. That 11-minute timer, that was with me spent buying 2 blocks worth of timer reduction as well. And the cost goes up. Significantly with each new block you buy. The first block costs 1 point, then it's 10 points, and I think it just goes up. And I think by the time you're unlocking the last block to keep, and I think the timer ends up with a minimum of 5 minutes anyway, which was the Planetside One number. I think you have to spend 750 points.
Wow.
And you get, I got 2 for the last base capture that I was involved in. Obviously,
you get more if you actually kill someone.
If you actually shoot people and actually kill people, you get more points as well. Yes, I know. But maybe I should just learn to play noob. But even when you've completely maxed that timer down, I think you're talking sort of 5, 4 minutes, 3 minutes. I don't know the exact number. I'd have to look it all up. There's Planetside 2 wiki everywhere. Can find these numbers. But... And that's assuming you don't then want to also buy all the other gubbins that you're supposed to put on this tank as well for unlock points. So, I mean, it's all right, because the bare bones Lightning that you get is quite fun to use. So, you know, I'll still keep going with it. But, you know, buying all the armour plating and the different sorts of turret tops and the radar and everything, it's all gonna add up. And that's points you then are not spending on your infantry survivability and all the gear there. And I sort of sat and I thought about this, and you know, just it occurred to me that what they've actually done there is created a free trial system that, of an indefinite length, that seamlessly merges into full membership. You don't actually have different strata of membership. I mean, they do have a proper monthly membership if you want, and presumably they dole out quite a few cert points a month to go with that. But you can play for free, and if you're stupid like me and don't mind grinding for years and years, you'll eventually get to the point where you're a proper player. But initially, what they've done is they've basically just sort of blended the concept of a free 14-day trial into the main game itself in quite a seamless fashion. But so unless you're... I don't know. It depends how tenacious and stubborn you want to be. The game is playable without sinking any points into it. And you do get points for kills and points for you know, being around during base captures and stuff. But they're dished out in a similar sort of almost negligible way to the way Dilithium works for cash-up points in Star Trek Online. You know, I'm quite happy to sit there grinding away for a year to get one spaceship that costs $20, but many people are not going to resist the temptation there, and they're just going to go, all right, then, I spend 20 quid, you know, was it $20 on whatever, you know, just snack foods or whatever in the average couple of weeks. The upper threshold of participation becomes a lot more attractive, I suppose. You just don't think twice about shortcutting that grind, the frustration and so on. I mean, I think I can only do this because at some fundamental level I hate myself. It's a kind of flagellation. It's me. You know how old monk, you know, in ancient times monks would whip their own backs?
Yeah.
It's that kind of thing. That's what I do, but using the tool of MMOs, which doesn't actually leave physical scarring, just mental scarring. But yes, but mostly I'm just frustrated with PlanetSide 2 this last week or so, because it's just so difficult to get in and play. Between 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock, you're just sat in a queue. And of course, if you're a premium member, you have a much, much shorter queue, but there is still a queue of 3 to 4 premium members in the queue. Presuming premium members get straight through to the front of the queue.
Yeah.
They have their own queue. It's that busy.
Yeah.
So that sort of negates the reasoning behind being a premium member at all, if you still have to queue, but in a shorter queue. I don't know. I think it will get easier as the months go on.
Yeah, the numbers are going to drop, because that is the way of things.
That's what happens to all MMOs, no matter how good or bad they are. You know, people lose interest, drift away much faster than new people can replace them. So I suppose I could just bite the bullet and pick a different server to be on. I mean, it's not like I've managed to actually group with anyone I know yet, so I might as well be on a different server.
Are they avoiding you?
No, it's just conflict scheduling, that sort of, you know, different times and so on. No, we haven't set up a static night of the group. And unless you organise a static night, we must be here at this time on this day, then just spontaneous grouping doesn't seem to work for me. Or the folks we hang out with. I don't know. Imagine if you've got a vast guild, then you can always jump into a sort of in-guild pickup group any time you're logged in and playing. But is that much better than just pickup grouping with complete strangers without the guild? I don't know. Anyway, so yeah, that's mostly been my week. I won Skyrim.
Congratulations!
I finally got there. It turned out I was only about 2 missions away from the
end. Yeah, is that always the way? You set yourself up for a massive session to finish
right,
it.
I got
to
do
it. Finish it, and then you win.
I am the Dovahkiin. Hurrah! You know. Yeah, there was this sort of weird fight with a giant who was guarding. Oh, is it? Am I right for spoilers?
I haven't played it.
Well, basically, there's a quite difficult and somewhat bizarre and out of context and unnecessary fight against some people who you thought were supposed to be helping you just to prove that you're awesome. You know, I wish people would cut that crap out. I'm trying to save the world here. Do not make me prove my worth to you. Just help.
If the world is saved, my worth is proven.
We can sort all this admin out afterwards. There's a sodding great dragon trying to destroy everything. Come and help me. Stop with this nonsense. Only the strongest may pass rubbish. Anyway, got to the end and there was the big fight with the dragon, which was actually a lot easier than I thought it was going to be, because I'd massively overspecced myself on archery. I had 100 archery, which then has a 15% chance of stunning everyone on every hit. Which didn't actually work on the dragon, but just the sheer critical damage I was doing with each shot. The big bad went down much easier than a lot of the intermediate bads, as it turned out.
Isn't it always the way?
And there was a bit of a, yes, congratulations, here's a special active day, once a day power you can have that does a thing, and then I'm going to dump you back in the real world, and literally that was it. You know, you're back in this, it's the typical Bethesda thing, hooray, you've saved the world, now wander the world forever. In a world of NPCs who won't remember your accomplishment or really be affected by any of the events that went on. Basically, the whole main Dragonborn storyline thing seems curiously disconnected from everything else, and you're just left to get on with it and carry on. And to be honest, I'm not sure I'd want it any other way. That's why you're there in a Bethesda game, isn't it? You just want a massive, massive plot of back garden you can wander around in pretending to be a wizard, you know. And they do very well at that. The sort of continued sort of main story narrative thing they're not so good at. I mean, I remember the furore with Fallout 3, but them trying to do a poignant story there and just attracting a load of backlash. So I don't know. I just like wandering around in there, but my character's reached that sort of so powerful it's not interesting anymore threshold, so I think it may be a start and alt in a single player game.
Or DLC time.
Maybe. I'm sort of a bit wary of DLC in general, but if it's something that sounds interesting, I may do that, yeah. Because Skyrim's all through Steam on the PC, so I imagine it'll be quite seamless to accidentally go and buy another whole load of story.
Oh yeah, you probably have done it already.
it's probably downloaded it already.
And then, of course, it's the descent into patches for it. Mods.
Well, that was the specific reason, because back when I got Skyrim, I was going through quite an anti-PC phase, because I thought the 360 was the mutt's nuts. And I was, the only reason I didn't buy Skyrim on the 360 was purely because of, I knew from Oblivion, you know, my experiences with Oblivion, how crazy awesome the mods are going to be in about a year's time. So setting myself up for that, really. Well, next time I come back to Skyrim, and I imagine I'm probably going to get a bit bored of Skyrim now all of a sudden, there'll be the option of turning it into a different world that will be suitable for hardware that only exists 2 years into the future.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's more of a long-term investment, really, a Bethesda game on the PC. So, yeah, that's pretty much what I've been up to. What about yourself?
Well, first of all, I decided that it would be a very good use of my time if I watched all of the Avengers movies in order.
Yeah, whatever possessed you. I mean, I seen the Avengers movie.
We'll get to that. Actually, right. I haven't got around to rewatching those. The first problem I encountered...
They're not very good. That's quite a problem, I think. Was that a spoiler? Sorry, carry on.
The first problem I came to was deciding which order to watch them.
Oh. Order of release, I suppose.
Yeah, you have the order of release. Yeah. You have the order of what in what time the main bit of the film happens. No. And then you also have the problem that one film starts in the present, goes back to World War II, ends in the present.
Oh, wow. Interweaving wibbly-wobbly timey-wimey, yeah.
And the end scenes are all... Hulk happened sometime after the first Iron Man, but came out first. It's all very confusing. In the end, I decided to go for...
Have a look on the web. There must be charts. Somebody probably has put together proper...
There is a chart project with management all of the films chart. There and the shorts saying when each bit is.
Did that not help you?
No. It would have made it incredibly complicated. But
you get to the point where you're having to stop films at particular times in and then start the next one and then stop that. Oh, right.
So I watched The Incredible Hulk.
Okay.
Because it came out.
This was the Edward Norton thing, not the... Because there was another Incredible Hulk before that, but is that...
That one doesn't count. That one
with, what's his name, Eric Banner, is it?
Yeah. Mm. The Incredible Hulk was way better than I remembered.
Hmm. I think I have seen that one, and I remember it mostly just being quite an interesting, tense action thriller centred almost entirely on the David Banner character.
Yeah, it's and not really a Hulk.
He doesn't even Hulk out, and rarely at all during that film. There's a bit at the end.
Yeah, there's a couple of bits.
But mostly it's just, you know, a scientist trying to cope with a debilitating condition. It's quite poignant in places.
It has the problem of having a really, really, really bad guy.
Hmm. I don't even remember.
It was the British Special Forces guy who hulked up himself.
No, I don't remember that at all. That's how bad it was.
Yeah, a very rubbish film. Yeah. But yeah, the film wasn't as bad as I remembered. Well, of course, Hulk being the best thing in the Avengers movie.
Yeah, I'll give you that. And that was only one scene. And anyone who's seen the Avengers will know the scene I mean.
It's a couple.
Ah, no. Just one redeeming point. Carry on.
Luckily, I like these movies. Isn't it?
Well, you wouldn't. You'd wonder why you'd do that to yourself if you didn't.
Yeah. Then I watched Iron Men.
Iron Men?
Yeah.
Iron Man 1 and 2?
Yeah.
Okay. I see what you did there.
I assume there was a gap between them, but no. They were back to back.
Oh, right. Okay.
Release-wise. Still brilliant. Still. Yeah. Robert Downey Jr. still.
Well, that's the thing with Iron Man. I mean, I don't come at this from a comic perspective, but basically Robert Downey Jr. just steals the show entirely. And, you know, you can see why there's almost no scenes in that film where he's got the mask on. It's just Robert Downey Jr. doing what he does.
Even when he's got the mask on, there are scenes of him in the mask.
Yeah, exactly. Just to remind you, Robert Downey Jr. Don't look at the man in the suit. It's Robert Downey Jr.
First film, brilliant. Second film, has its moments.
Yeah, I saw the second film first and saw the first film much later and for such a long time kept wondering why everyone was shouting boxer scraps on the internet. But now I understand. Yeah.
Yeah, so quite good.
Yeah.
Then I saw Thor.
I've not seen that one at all.
Huh?
No.
Why not?
Can't be bothered, really.
You do know it's...
Apathy.
Yeah, well, I like Thor. Thor is a good movie, I think.
Okay.
The plot's a little... weak in some areas.
I found the character in Avengers to be the least interesting and likable, but only marginally less interesting and likable than Captain America.
Captain America's rubbish.
Yeah.
But yeah, Thor's good. I would have liked it in Avengers if they'd actually got Natalie Portman in, instead of quietly...
Is she important in Thor?
Yeah.
Okay.
Instead of saying, we got her to a safe place.
Right, okay.
Yeah, but Thor's good. I like the idea that... super powerful aliens can be seen as gods.
Yeah,
meddling in
the affairs. Original lore of Thor in comic, you know, in the comics, is he an alien from another dimension or something?
So.
Or are they?
I've avoided.
Are they supposed to be literal Norse gods?
Thor is one of those comics I've ignored religiously because it sounded a bit silly.
Because it seems like this modern film reinvention, there that super powerful aliens who've decided to have a soft spot for the people of Earth or something. Hmm.
Yeah, and then, of course, there was Captain America.
Yeah.
Yeah, the world's least interesting superhero.
I've not seen his own film of that either. I've only seen him in the Avengers.
The film's good. It's shot well. It has some great moments. It's just, I can't care about Captain America.
Well, is that because...
Tommy Lee Jones is brilliant in it.
Would you care more about a British-themed version? There is one, isn't there?
Yeah, there is.
Captain Britain or whatever. But no. So, well, just the idea of a nation personified as a superhero.
It's...
Or it's just to come across as a massive xenophobic fascist.
No. The idea of the character is he gets his superpowers... And then the first thing that they do is turn him into a marketing tool instead of letting him go fight. And then he does go fight and he is awesome, of course. And everyone is shown up to, you know, they should have put him in the field.
So it's more like other people's expectations forced on him.
Yeah, and it just doesn't really work for me as a idea. It doesn't, doesn't quite feel right. And yeah, and so I've now got just the Avengers. Did I miss anything? I think so. I've just got the Avengers to watch again now.
Yeah, yeah.
Which will be good, because I did like the Avengers.
The Black Widow didn't get her own film, so...
No, she's in...
She turns up at the end of Iron Man 2, doesn't she? As Tony Stark's minder.
She's in quite a lot of Iron Man 2.
Okay.
Yeah, so I've got that to watch, and that'll be fun.
Right.
Probably do that after the show. I love what Marvel did. Just the whole idea of being able to take six or whatever films it is and get a series out of it.
It's quite ambitious. I mean, they must just know they were going to make money ahead of time to do it. Otherwise, it becomes quite a gamble to sink that much investment into
it. It was an incredible gamble anyway.
I mean, who does a chain of six films these days? You know, yeah. I mean you're surprised to see three films done back to back these days. Lord of the Rings, you know, being an example.
Unless you're based on a vastly popular book.
You've got to know you're going to make money
like
ahead
Twilight
of time.
Or Harry Potter. Yeah. It's really hard to get people to agree.
I suppose.
It's one of the reasons why I'm quite not very scared, if that makes sense, of what's going to happen with the new Star Wars films. Because that's Disney as well. These are Disney.
Yeah, yeah.
If it's allowed to be free and do what it wants and has clever people behind
you'd have to do something
isn't Lucas.
You'd have to do something really wrong to make the new Star Wars films not make money.
Yeah, but you'd have to do something really wrong to make the new Star Wars films worse than the last three, for instance.
Yeah, but I bet those made money.
Oh, they did.
Well, there you go. That's the point, isn't it?
Yeah, true, but they'll make
that's
more
such a cynic.
If it's popular, it'll make more money.
Hmm.
So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I'm quite looking forward to it, I'd say.
Are there plans for more Avengers films?
Yes.
It would be stupid not to, really, wouldn't it?
Yes. Thor 2 is currently filming a couple of miles away.
Ah, right.
In the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, they probably stopped in the woods and in the studio now. Iron Man 3's out next year.
Okay.
Captain America 2's coming. Avengers 2's coming.
That's just an entire industry there, isn't it?
Yeah.
They just keep
cranking
them out.
It's a film a year for however long. And there's enough.
A film a year and a job for life.
Yeah. Until all the stars get too expensive.
Mm.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Whether
right.
Keep going. What else? I've been making lots of Malifaux plastic models.
What is Malifaux?
Malifaux is a game.
Do people other than Games Workshop do wargaming miniatures?
Yes, it's a wargaming thing by a company called Weird Miniatures, who is not Games Workshop.
Wow.
And
how is that allowed to happen?
Yeah, it's basically a... dystopian Victorian type setting.
Okay.
And
my interest is piqued.
A low number of models.
Uh-huh. So my interest is further piqued.
Small crew
yes.
sizes. So
we need more games that don't need 4,000 miniatures to play.
But the thing that always put me off was the metal models were always such a bugger to build.
Oh, okay.
Because they're quite small and very, very fiddly.
Yeah,
and I kept knocking bits off.
You have to start... When you have to start pinning models using, you know,
well, they're too
using
small.
Paper clips
they were too
drilled
small
into
socks. Because the paper clip was, in some of the cases, was way larger than the cane, say, I was trying to attach.
So what, these not metals now?
These are plastics. They've gone into plastics. No one can make metal minis anymore because metal is far too expensive.
Well, that's a good thing as well because metal was far too fiddly and they'd always... Because you'd have to use super glue and that you always got really brittle.
Yeah.
So the arms would snap off and all sorts, you know, at the drop of a hat.
So
plastic's much better.
I've got the first set of releases for Malifaux.
Okay.
So far I've built a rail golem.
A rail golem.
Which
brilliant.
Is quite good.
He's got a based on a steam train.
Yeah.
There. Come to life. Fantastic.
Mr. Tannen, who is the world's teeniest model. And what is that? Lazarus. And I've also got a box up there of a whole crew.
Okay.
And
so what do you do with these models? Presumably, is it small squad, tactical war game type thing?
Basically. And do you remember those cardboard city tiles that I have.
Oh,
the 3D ones.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they use that.
Oh, wow. So that sounds like quite an elaborate thing. So the scenery is very much a big part of the thing.
Well, it can be. You don't have to use it, but I have one of those, so I will.
Okay.
So the moment the second crew is released in plastic over there,
yep.
We'll have two crews.
Ah, and then
we'll better have a game.
There will be a lab session, I imagine.
There'll be a lab session.
Excellent.
And it will be fun.
Okay. Well, we shall see.
And you'll like it because it doesn't use dice.
That's good. I get too frustrated with randomness in my wargaming. I want my troops to go here and do that, not possibly go there and do that.
Which is why you play orcs.
Yes. the sheer weight of dice rolls tends to average out much easier.
Mm. Now, these plastics are actually very good quality. They're not quite as good, I'd say, as the Games Workshop plastics.
Okay.
But then again, experience-wise, Games Workshop have 30 years head start.
Well, yeah, they do tend to dominate the market a bit.
But
it's good to see other people doing stuff.
The thing that Malifaux always has is the miniatures are very, very good and interesting.
Mm.
And these
Do look quite quirky, yeah. It's not your standard space orc, space elf, whatever.
No. It's just interesting to look at, and I'm quite looking forward to painting them.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's all big part of the hobby. They're interesting as modelling projects.
Yes, well, especially as they don't really give instructions.
just sort of wing it a bit.
One set had instructions.
Okay, yeah, that one does look quite complicated.
But it's wrong.
Good.
And it doesn't even mention the screw.
What?
That's Lazarus. Lazarus has a screw to it in the back to hold it together.
Oh, God.
First time I put together a model, needed a screw.
Wow.
He's also poseable in not very well ways.
Yeah, yeah.
He's poseable. Then you put all this stuff on, which restricts it.
Fair enough. The thoughts there.
Yeah. And the others are easy enough to work out how to build them.
Mm-hmm. We should have to have a game of this and see if it plays well as well.
Yeah.
Presumably by the time you've got everything together, there'll be enough rules revisions for us to have a working game.
Oh, no,
how new is this? Has it been around a while?
It's been out for years.
Oh, okay.
There's a
tried and tested game system.
A massive collection of models. It's just they've only just started on the plastics.
Okay.
And the metals had annoyed me too much.
You need to drop a link in the show notes so people can go and have a look at this stuff.
Okay, what else? Eclipse.
Oh, God.
We played Eclipse.
Wow.
Six-player Eclipse.
My word.
Rapidly turned to five-player Eclipse.
One of our participants didn't make it to round three. No.
Something about work in the morning.
Yeah. We should have started much earlier than that. I think probably 1 hour per player might be a fair guideline for that.
It was a lot quicker after we got set up. The setup.
It was terrifying. I was just scared of starting to read the rules out because it just looked so. I thought I was just losing the room. You know how like you have a stand-up comedian has a gig that goes bad quite quickly, and you know very early on it's just not going to work. I thought I was just really losing the room.
Should we explain what Eclipse is?
It is, yes.
Eclipse is basically the board game version of Master of Orion.
It's some bizarre idea that it might be a fantastic thing to turn a 4X space empire building trading exploration combat game in turn-based thing into a board game, which you might think would be impossible, and you're very nearly right.
But it does work.
It does work. It's incredible. Yeah. The game's played over 9 turns. Each turn is a massive and extensive series of working way around the table. Each player takes an action, spends some points to do the action, and so on. And you can build, explore, upgrade ships, build new ships, do science research, explore new sectors of space, and these are all done with big space hexagons that each have features on. You flip them, you put them on the table.
Space battles
are there as well. Diplomacy is it pretty much does do everything that you'd expect from a Master of Orion style space game, Galactic Civilizations, which whatever, but in cardboard and counter form. There's tons and tons of small wooden cubes of different colors. There's little discs, and so it's just so much cool stuff. It doesn't have cards, does it?
I think
it needs cards as well, just to really
send
complexity to the max.
I'm sure an expansion will add cards.
It does very much follow your observational rule that the more complicated it looks, the easier it is to play.
It's weird that, but it's true.
It does seem to be holding up. Lords of Waterdeep's another one. You open the box and you look at it all and you just think, oh my God. But essentially, yes, you get to that awkward setup phase and the first round or two as you read and stumbling away through the rules, and then it picks up, and next thing you know, it's moving along at a fair old clip.
Small World is the same.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's a real skill to not be intimidated by opening a new modern board game of the contemporary type for adults, because they're just so much junk in the box most of the time.
It took me an entire morning to punch out all the card bits.
But it is really good. I mean, we didn't make it to the end, which is a shame.
No, we finished at just the right moment.
We got, I don't know, I think we had about three turns remaining.
We did, but turns were getting a lot faster.
They were getting faster, yeah, yeah. And we, as you know, as the galaxy would has become more explored, more settled, fleets were building up. There's NPC spaceships, the ancients, who sort of end up on these tiles and need to be cleared before you can start going at each other.
Yeah, blew a couple of them up.
Yeah. And the resource gatherings there, it's quite clever what they do with the tracks of cubes. The more cubes you put onto the table, the more spaces underneath the cubes are exposed.
And which, the number gets higher.
The number gets higher. So basically you don't have to count up how many cubes you've got on the table. You just look at how many cubes have been spent from your supply to know that that many cubes are generating that many
points.
You
put a cube on a brown planet, that's materials for building ships. Mm-hmm. So you as an action, put it down. Mm-hmm. Then you're looking at your track, you get an extra bit of brown.
Yeah, you've lost a cube from your brown track, which exposed the numbers that were underneath the spaces the cubes were in, and that number is now higher. So you've got more material income and can build more spaceships and stuff. Just absolutely remarkable how a game as notoriously complex as something like, not Master of Orion, whatever, can even work as a board game. Yeah. But it doesn't. It's just to be fun as well. It just doesn't degenerate into this horrific bookkeeping exercise that you might expect, because just the really clever way the play mats and the main board tiles and everything have been designed. It's some real solid thoughts gone into it. It's definitely worth a look.
It's hard to get hold of, though.
Yeah, this was the big thing. It was you spent quite a lot of time trying to find one.
Yeah, and then I got it because there was a new printing and I ordered it that day.
I mean, Board Game Geek, that's your go-to website there for all things board game. And on there, it's just full of people desperately trying to find a copy how notoriously rare these things are.
The price guide they were saying on there when I looked on Friday was 150 quid.
150 quid, wow.
That's how much it was going for at the moment on Amazon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you managed to jump in.
When I got it at cost.
Because, yeah, yeah. You picked the right time.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's in a matter of weeks, actually, there's an expansion being reprinted, so I shall grab that. That's it, up to 9 players.
Oh my god, can you imagine that? But it was a lot of fun, and yeah, we had quite a few people who just not really that into spaceships and sci-fi, and they were playing it and still enjoying it themselves.
We've rescheduled a game and we're going to play again in a week's time. And
really need to start early, I think, if you want to get the thing done before midnight. So it's lengthy, but quite engaging. Yep. Quite engaging. I liked it.
And, of course, I won, so it's brilliant.
That's because I turtled again and tried to do the research thing. You can theoretically win by just doing research. It generates victory points that way. But I think typically it's like how you can theoretically win a game of chess in 4 moves, only if, you know, all of your opponents are helping.
I think you could, because it'll get you, 15 points extra?
But if you did nothing else but research and didn't do any battles.
You'd still need to do some battles as well. But
I imagine there are websites out there with optimal strategy walkthroughs and guides.
A lot of them are wrong.
You've already looked. You scumbag. So competitive. Yeah. But I very much enjoyed that and would play it again.
I won with a last minute, very powerful ship move on the central system. Mm.
Conquered the centre of the galaxy and it was all over after that.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a brilliant game and I recommend people have a look if they can find it.
Well, certainly look it up on Board Game Geek and have a look at some of the images, some of the photos of games in progress. You'll blow your mind. It's fantastic.
Yeah. And lastly, I should mention a computer game.
Yep.
Yeah, Need for Speed.
Oh, okay, you've actually played a game this week.
Yeah, I have actually played a game.
Jolly good.
Yeah, Need for Speed, I finally got into it.
Okay.
Do you know what it was that made me get into it?
Oh, yeah, because you were having troubles.
Yeah. The BAC Mono.
Oh, you just found a car that you like.
Well, I had to look it up to see if this was actually a real car.
Stretching a bit on the conceptual end of things, was it?
And it is a car. It's a real car.
Okay.
It's just based on Formula One technology.
It did look like a Formula One car, but...
And it's a single-seater... obviously a track day car, but road legal, is awfully, awfully, awfully fast and manoeuvrable. And it solved all of the problems I had with pottering around with stuff like slightly older supercars and whatever, which just can't get out of the way of oncoming traffic.
Uh-huh, yeah, because typically they're not generally raced against oncoming traffic, so that's not really something they're designed for.
No, it's weird, and I think that Ferrari need to get on this. And also I discovered that it's all well and good. You win a race, get the upgrade, fit it to your car,
mm-hmm.
but then you need to look at the secondary upgrade and get the pro version, which makes it even better.
Hmm.
And you do that by doing actions in-game.
So you're grinding out things that whose purpose solely exists to make you grind out things better, and you were having lots of trouble with the game until you went and ground out a much more powerful character and then came back to the noob zone and beat them.
And even better,
it's all sounding a bit MMO.
Once you finish grinding up your vehicle, you have no reason to use it ever again.
Because you've then granted a new one through that.
Because then you need to
thing.
Do another one to build that up and get the points through the takedown.
It's like MMOs have permeated every aspect of computer gaming and board gaming.
But I was really enjoying it towards the end. It's still frustrating.
That's the main thing.
It's still a bunch of pretentious twaddle when it comes to the videos.
Oh, God, the cutscenes. I was watching you play some of it before the show there, and just the cutscenes while it's trying to seamlessly load stuff in the background are really ridiculous and pretentious art house attempts. It was just terrible. Like one of them where they decided to shoot the cutscene in monochrome black and red, all Sin City style. It was, what's going on here? This is a racing game. Just get on with it. Yes. But apart from that, it did very much seem like it is really Burnout Paradise. But,
it really
but with
is
police
Burnout
cars
Paradise.
For some reason.
Yeah, it's Burnout Paradise with the annoyance of police cars.
Mm.
Very frequent. When you finish a race, if you have a...
It's easy drive mode there.
If you finish a race and you still... And the police were involved, they will still care about you when the race finishes. It doesn't clear it out. So very often, I will just stop and get arrested just to get rid of that.
I just couldn't see why the police needed to be in that game, to be honest. A little bit of a racing speed challenge. But you weren't ever racing against the police, were you? Were there events where you're trying to escape?
Yes, there are events where you have to escape, but...
It just seemed like an unnecessary extra hassle from the format where you could just drive around and do what you like in the previous game. Suddenly you got this threat meter like GTA, and I don't know, if you get it to 6, do they send gunships after you?
No.
See, they weren't shooting at you or anything.
No, the biggest you get is SWAT teams. SWAT vans.
It's just SWAT vans, yeah exactly.
Which
no one's shooting at you.
Only really a problem because they're big.
Yeah.
And, it's very hard to bash through them. When you,
they do seem to give up very easily and then forget that they were chasing you 10 minutes ago when you...
You get out of their line of sight and the attention meter goes down and after a while they just give up.
It's the attention deficit PD. It's just terrible.
Yeah, it's an interesting selection of cars, although half the cars are stuff that you never really care about.
There was an awful lot of mid-range, reasonably respectable cars that you might see at the top end of real-life driving on motorways and things, and there just didn't seem much of a point in there. I suppose you've got to collect them all, isn't it? The Pokemon thing.
Spent a little bit of time driving through the garage to randomly change the colour of my car, so it was my car.
Burn through this like garage forecourt at like 140 mile an hour, and they just instantly respray your car a different colour
and
for some
it.
Reason. And fix it, yeah.
Which is
Stop
handy.
Stop changing the colour of my car! I just want the bumper fixed.
Because the police have those spike strips they put down on the road and burst your tyres.
Yeah.
And unless you've got reinflating tyres, which is one of the options, or you can get into one of those garages, you're stuffed.
Yeah, right. I didn't see you hitting any today. Maybe you're just a very skillful driver. But that does actually blow your tyres up, does it?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, and then you've got sparking.
Spark rims, all that.
Yeah. there's off-road and on-road races and mixes of them, so choosing your tyres is useful.
Yeah. You've got all the billboards to crash through.
Oh, all the billboards have been crashing through, yeah.
Which all seem to have BioWare on them.
Not all.
Did you have some sort of vendetta against the Old Republic or what?
It's all EA Studios on the billboards.
Right.
But yeah, BioWare.
But you are encouraged by core gameplay mechanics to try and smash these billboards to bits.
And so I do take great pleasure in taking out the BioWare ones.
This is for your unremovable helmets, pal.
There are no mythic ones.
Mm.
It is just BioWare.
Yeah.
Yes.
Dice. There was a Dice one.
Yeah, Dice.
Now, couldn't really recognise many of them. But.
Dice, of course, do the multiplayer for an awful lot of EA games, as well as doing their own stuff with Battlefield.
Mm.
Yeah, and there's people like Visceral in it and EA Sports and people. EA Sports is the worst named studio ever.
Yeah. What do you do then?
So, yeah, I'm actually enjoying it. Unfortunately, I feel that my time route is coming to an end.
You're getting quite close to the... Would you say the core mechanic there is to go after these most wanted cards?
Yeah, you've got
you earn the skill points and you're continually trading.
Beyond that, it's just a case of picking a car, upgrading it, picking another car.
So you've got three more to go, and like there's a Veyron and something else and another one at the top of that.
Yeah, I'm not sure it was at the top. But I think you're right, it might be a Zonda.
And then at the top, once you've got it all, I suppose there's always the filling in the corners aspects of any open world-ish game.
Yeah, but there's an awful lot of corners that need filling in, because all of those cars have a series of, six or so races to do the upgrades, then a task to upgrade the upgrades.
Just seems like a shame it's taken you so far into the main gameplay to decide you're actually starting to like it.
It is, yeah.
it takes quite a while to grow on you then.
The frustrations are still there. It's just I'm finally getting enough enjoyment out so that the frustrations aren't quite as frustrating anymore.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's the only real game I've played.
You let the side down. I have to audition for a new co-host or something.
You've seen how many films I watched this week.
Well,
I didn't even include Ghostbusters.
You're allowed to watch films after 1990.
Yes, I am.
Oh, that's your other gig, isn't it?
Mm. I had to watch Ghostbusters as well, but I won't talk about this because I need to talk about that on Movie
exclusive content for your other show.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And then next week I've got to watch I Spit in Your Grave because Jack hasn't seen it and neither have I, and Jack
I've
wants
never
to talk
even
about
heard
it.
Of that. And this is why I'm not on that show.
And I'm really not sure I want to watch this film. One of the classic video nasties.
Oh, right.
I did watch the documentary on video nasties.
Right. Well, enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not entirely sure I will. So, yeah, basically, that's
good.
My week.
Right. Did you learn anything this week?
I learnt that you really, really do have to persevere with some games before you like them.
I learnt that Zozo's dining room table is not big enough to hold an entire galaxy.
It's not,
is it? He needs to put the middle leaf in.
Yeah, he does. And possibly extensions out the other way as well.
So, do your spiel.
Yes, you can catch up with us on our website, howtomurdertime.com.
We've got a website. I'm doing book reviews at the moment, because why the hell not? It's my website.
What we want. where you can catch some past shows. Must put the rest of the past shows back up.
Yes, we'll restore the archives at some point.
Yeah. you can catch us on iTunes. And please go on to iTunes. There's a link on the site. And give us a review, because we're still trying to get the numbers up. And our numbers did not double by Monday morning, because I didn't post this till Friday. So
you're starting to sound accusatory.
I admit it was.
You're not blaming the listener, are you? By definition, they're listening. They're not the ones to blame. Tell your friends. You listening at home, you're great. You're okay.
I will admit that the fact that the deadline passed before I posted the show may not have helped.
But it's not about the numbers. It's about us entertaining you.
Yes.
Or something.
And the sweet sponsorship deals. Which have never, ever, ever existed in podcasting.
You're rambling.
Yes, you can also catch me on just about any gaming platform as Seniac.
And you can't catch me because I'm very exclusive.
You are. No, you're not. And I guess that's about it.
Right. So with that, we'll see you next time.
Goodbye.